sunny, very warm, a high of 83. Right now, 74 in Kenosha, 73 in Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Wednesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. That familiar music is by the great Italian composer Gioachino Rossini, and it is the opening measures of the overture to his most often and most beloved opera, most often performed opera and most beloved opera, Il Barbiere di Siviglia, The Barber of Seville. And the people of southeastern Wisconsin and northeastern Illinois have the opportunity to experience Rossini's delightful comedy in person this coming weekend and the following weekend as well, courtesy of the Kenosha Opera Festival, now in its second season. With us in WGTD studios today for today's morning show is, first of all, Nick Huff, a recent Carthage grad and a busy professional tenor who has also gone on to create with his wife Keely the Kenosha Opera Festival. So he is its artistic director. And Nick is with us along with two of the talented young singers who are in the cast for The Barber of Seville. We have the barber himself, baritone Hee-Sung Che, and also we have our Rosina, Edith Grossman. And we welcome all three of you to the morning show. Glad you're here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for not sleeping till noon today. And I know it's been a very, very busy week as you gear up for these performances, which are about to begin. So, Nick, let's begin with you. Some of our WGTD listeners might remember the conversations we had last year during and about the Kenosha Opera Festival. Remind our listeners about what prompted you and your wife, Keely, to create this festival.
Yeah, so it was she and I, and also Kayla Bingen, another Carthage grad, and her husband Rick Bingen, all together sort of realizing there's a good pitch for this here. We always sort of joke that it's a wonder there wasn't an opera festival here before this. You know, there's Milwaukee just to the north, there's Chicago just to the south, Madison's within a quick drive, and besides that, there's a wonderful classical musical audience here in Kenosha that attends all sorts of classical music events and concerts very, very well. And so you have the local market, you have the expanded market. It's kind of one of those places, oh, and a huge Italian community here, of course, the kind of place that needs something like an opera festival. And so I looked around and I even did a little research to see if there'd ever been anything like that here. There was something, SUPA, you know, fits and starts, things came up, but a proper summer opera festival, no, never had been done. So we decided to do it.
And, of course, you had a spectacular opening summer season. I mean, it really couldn't have gone better. It was a in a sense, almost a charmed existence with a really fine group of young fellows that you were helping to train in the business of opera, and then ultimately culminating in two performances, I think, of Donizetti's The Daughter of the Regiment, in which you and your wife both sang. So it was onward to a second season, which has been an interesting set of challenges, of course, thanks to, among other things, COVID. But otherwise, how does it feel to be mounting a second season of the festival?
It feels good. I mean, you know, it's one of those things. The first season was almost charmed. We happened to hit that lull in the COVID numbers, and everyone thought maybe it was kind of going to finally slowly go away. And of course, everybody knows now in retrospect that didn't happen. But, you know, it was a moment where the numbers were low and we could operate pretty freely. We didn't have any COVID outbreaks last year. You know, so this year has been challenging in that we've had a couple, you know, and you have to quarantine artists and, you know, handle it properly, make sure everyone's safe and happy and healthy. But, you know, all of those things aside, the fact that it's still going forward and it's going forward so strongly, we didn't have to cancel a thing, even with two outbreaks, you know, we're feeling really good about it. It's really exciting. It's exciting that it's only the second season and it's already grown to such a great place. And we have all these great artists here with us that, you know, they really are a special treat from the four corners of the country, if not world, you know.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
We should mention that one thing that has made this second festival more challenging for you, certainly, is the fact that at the first one last year, you were really side by side with Keeley, your wife-to-be, now your wife.
Right.
But I mean, you were really in it together and very much a team. But Keeley is elsewhere this summer for happy reasons, but it leaves more of the responsibility squarely on your shoulders. Tell our listeners about that.
Yeah, well, so Keeley, besides being a professional opera singer, who she's working right now, that's why she's not here. She's over at the Glimmerglass Festival performing there. Besides that, she's got her doctorate in vocal pedagogy, and she teaches and is an excellent mentor to students. And so part of the fellowship, part of the idea for having that was that she's so excellent with them, and, you know, she'll make sure, guide them so well that it was kind of something we felt like we couldn't pass up with her there. Of course, this summer she's not with us, so I'm the one guiding and mentoring the fellows, and I hope I'm doing a pretty decent job of it. But yeah, it's one of those things where we're all still young, vital performers, and if something too good to be true comes up, you have to go take it.
So absolutely. So we wish her well, but we miss her presence in the Kenosha Opera Festival in this second season. So summarize for our listeners, and I think many of them have probably taken in some of what's already happened, but sketch what has happened in this summer's festival before now.
Sure. So we deliberately try to have a smattering of events, all kinds of stuff. So we had our guest artist recital where the cast of Barber gave this wonderful recital with just hit after hit. All kinds of fireworks and fun that evening. And then there was the brewer recital where we went to Public Craft Brewing and gave a recital of more of our, you know, hair down sort of repertoire, music theater and funny songs, drinking songs, drinking song from Fledermaus and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. There was a master class. We had Mitch Rowe from the Florida Grand Opera fly in, and he worked with our fellows. And that was a wonderful event. He really, really pushed them hard for a lot of great stuff. And, you know, it's cool for them to work with somebody like him he runs the studio at a major, major house. We had the actual Black Box Opera. It was our first time trying that on. Last year, the fellows just performed scenes. This year, they had an actual cut-down opera that we did in Black Box fashion, sort of scaled-back fashion, Orfeo ed Euridice. And that just closed, so we're very excited about that. Congrats to the fellows. They did a great job. And that just leaves now Barber of Seville.
Hmm. So when did preparation for the Barber of Seville begin? Or, I mean, how long a process is it to mount this, to get it on its feet?
Sure. Pretty much we're planning all year. So last year ended, we were all pretty pooped out, so we took a week. And then after that, we just jumped right back on into the saddle and started. So I already had a logo and branding ready about a year ago, and we started from there. You start looking for your cast. You start, the biggest thing is finding sources of funding. You know, we have Kayla is a really gifted grant writer, and so she and I work together to do a lot of grant writing and just all of the different pieces that the public may not think about or see. To put together something like this as a nonprofit, it's really a year-round sort of a job.
So when did your cast, in terms of heavy-hitting soloists like we have in the studio, when did they come to town and when did actual rehearsals begin?
Sure. So we started arriving July 11th or 10th in some cases. There's a great story about that. I'll save that for Heesung if he wants to tell it. But they were all scheduled to arrive the 11th. And so we had some airport pickups and you know, all the check-ins. We rented a house for them with several, you know, it's like a duplex, like several levels. Getting them all checked in and settled in, and then we started the next day, the 12th, rehearsing.
And you opened this coming Friday.
We open this coming Friday. It feels impossible that it's come up so fast, but yeah, we do. It's really exciting.
So tell us about the process of assembling your cast for the Barbara Seville. And I assume that some of the fellows, that's the kind of the young apprentice artists, are taking some of the smaller roles in the Barbara Seville. Oh, actually not.
No. Well, you know, the thing is, Orfeo is, we're very proud of Orfeo for being all female. It was a female chorus that we did, and the three leads were all ladies. Orfeo, the role of a man, is a pants role. If you don't know what that is, it's where a mezzo-soprano sings the role of a man. You can be any gender you want, but typically it was traditionally a woman filling a man's role. And so in that way, we had an entirely lady-led production, which was very exciting. Yeah. It did mean that there wasn't much overlap with the Barber of Seville. So
that's right. When it comes to the roles, yeah, there's not small little maidens in the Barber of Seville.
Not so much. Notary and this and that, and you know, we had some other chorus people fill in those sorts of things, but they're doing their classes and things now and observing and coaching with people.
When, of course, they had their hands full learning Orfeo and Eurydice, so
yeah,
that was
sure
big.
Did.
That was big enough. So, just tell us a little bit about the process of assembling your cast for The Barber of Seville.
Sure. You know, you sort of have to just sort of go through the grapevine. We were very, very close to actually holding auditions. I was in Manhattan last November. And fall is the typical audition period for opera singers. And so we were just about to do it, and then Omicron started swelling up. And so we thought, okay, this isn't quite going to work. So what we did was one more year of sort of going through the grapevine, asking around, finding people that you knew would be good for the roles. Like, I know Edie personally, so I said, oh, she really should do a Rosina. I knew you'd covered it. And so I sort of piece it together like that. Some people, like Heesung, are a friend of a friend who I said, you know, do you have a good Figaro? I'm looking for a Figaro right now, and I need somebody really, really good. And they said, oh, I know who. And so then you go check them out. I met you down in Florida, which was nice. You know, you just sort of piece it together. You're looking for all of the good casting, people that will fill the roles well, but also just seeing the daylights out of it, because that's really the main product at the end of the day. So you find them wherever you can, you know?
And, of course, this is about an opportunity for people to try out a role for the very first time in terms of on a real stage, accompanied by a real orchestra. And that's a great opportunity for young singers. I mean, often that's what they are most eagerly awaiting.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Putting roles on your resume is like the main thing. I can tell you from personal experience, that's you're just trying to pick up these things and get a shot at it. Bigger companies will most often trust you with a role if you've done it before, so you know, never hurts to have it.
Right. Well, for those of you just joining us, we are talking today on the morning show about the Kenosha Opera Festival in its second season. We're talking with Nick Huff, their artistic director, and we're going to introduce you now to two talented young singers who are headlining the cast for Rossini's wonderful comedy, The Barber of Seville, with performances coming up this weekend, July 29th and 31st, and then the following weekend, August 4th and 6th. So we're so happy to have both of you with us today, Edith Grossman and Heesung Che. And Edith, let's begin with you and just find out, first of all, a little bit of personal biography stuff. So tell us, first of all, where you're from originally and a little bit about your singing background, which I understand was primarily musical theater in the early going.
Yeah, so I'm originally from Buffalo, New York, actually the suburbs of Buffalo, New York, a little town called Elma. And there's a really, really great musical theater, regional theater scene in Buffalo. So I, coming out of high school, I was very fortunate enough that our high school drama director also worked in the Buffalo musical theater scene. So I got into that musical theater scene right out of high school and thought, oh, you know, maybe I'll do musical theater. I really love the music of it. And I'd been taking classical voice lessons, so I had been introduced to opera, but I hadn't decided that it was the career for me yet. And I explored more of the classical musical theater realm, Carousel, My Fair Lady, some Cole Porter, you know, Kiss Me, Kate. And then when I got to college, I was introduced more to the full scale of opera. So we had a scenes program that we did along with a full production in the spring. And so I was introduced to the full orchestration of opera. And that was my magic moment of, whoa, this is awesome. And this is what I want to do.
In other words, hearing orchestra doing opera, I mean, and singing opera with orchestra in the background versus piano or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, in musical theater, you of course have the microphone that you sing with, and there's often a lot of synthesizers, which is wonderful in itself. Like the musical Six uses a full like rock band, which is very exciting. But something about the orchestration in opera and the voice intermingling like through like natural acoustics, because there are no microphones used, of course. There's something really wonderful and magical when the voice and the orchestra are both leading the story, and then sometimes it's the voice leading the story, sometimes it's the orchestra, and they each react and kind of work as almost a character together, and I really loved that. So that was my magic moment to decide to go into opera. So I did my undergrad at SUNY Potsdam in New York, and then kind of jumped into the young artist scene, did some summer programs. Nick and I met at Marilla in 2019. Just kind of been freelancing since.
Fantastic. So you were in the Jake Heggie opera together?
Yes.
Yes. What was the name of your role in that?
I was Rachel. She was this lovely, lovely individual.
You had a great fight scene, though.
She had a great fight and death scene. It's one of those roles where you get this wonderful scene, and then you're out by intermission. So
there you go. But how exciting. And so that's where your connection was made then with Nick.
Yeah.
And this invitation then to come and be part of the Kenosha Opera Festival.
Yeah.
Very good. Sitting right next to you in our studios is the baritone who is performing the role of Figaro in The Barber of Seville, Hee-sung Che. And I understand you hail originally from South Korea. Is that right?
Yeah, South Korea. I was born in like Busan, which is really southern part of Korea. Yeah, but I didn't live that much in Busan, and then I moved to nearby Seoul, and then I went to college in Seoul, and then I did master in Seoul, and then I came to U.S. for studying opera more.
Right.
Yeah.
So tell us about when you were first introduced to opera. I mean, how did you first come to even hear it?
And my mom loved music a lot, like, when I was young, so like my sister also like plays violin, and like we were like musician family also. And when I was young, I did like boy soprano with like in the chorus and like everything that kind of stuff. And then I got voice transformed, so like I stopped singing and I was like just studying and like drawing. I was good thrower. Yeah. And then like in the middle school, like my voice got pretty settled, and my mom suggested me to try opera singing. So I just like checked with like professional opera singer, and then he said, oh, you have a talent. So I just started.
So your mom heard something in your voice where she thought opera would be good for
you? Yeah, because when I start like chorus thing when I was really young, like I was she has lots of LPs. So like she had lots of like tenors LP and baritones LP, and she used to like play a lot in our house, so I was always like mimicking them. Like even though I don't know the words and meaning, and I was just like following just recording, and she was so proud of it. And like when her friends comes to our house, like she always asked me to sing that.
Wow.
So I used to do that a lot.
Wow.
Yeah, that's why I feel like my mom like think that I have a talent with singing.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So when you went to college, then you were studying music and studying singing specifically?
Yeah, I get it. I majored in voice department. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah. and singing mostly opera at that point?
Yeah, I always seeking for opera. I mean, some people just go to the like pedagogy way, like some people go to like other way, but like I always like looking for like singing and performing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very good. And I'm assuming, are we talking about what we think of here as opera? Because I know that, for instance, in China,
mm-hmm.
when you talk about opera, you're talking about a very different kind of opera that's mm-hmm. based in China.
Yeah.
Does Korea have its own operatic tradition, or were you mostly singing Mozart and Rossini and so on?
I mostly sing like Mozart and like Gounod and Rossini and like Italian and mm-hmm. French, that kind of stuff. But like in Korea, we do have our own opera, but like not that popular.
Mm.
Yeah, but in concert, like we sing lots of like Korean songs, which is beautiful.
Ah, very good.
Uh-huh.
Just tell us a bit about the decision that you and I assume your parents made for you to ultimately come to the United States to mm-hmm. continue studying. Tell us about that decision to make that big move. And was mm-hmm. that a kind of a scary move to make?
Actually, no. My mother's family all lives in Portland, Oregon. So, like, we visit a lot when I was young. So, my ear was pretty open, but I couldn't speak well, just like now.
You're doing great.
Yeah.
You're doing great.
But I'm pretty, like, familiar with, like, American culture things and English. And so, like, my mom invited from my aunt to get a green card, so I have a green card when I was young, so I keep that green card even though I was in Korean college, yeah. And then I think my mom planned everything.
Sounds like she had a master plan, and it's worked out
because
well.
Because I love to sing always. Mm-hmm. Like she knows that. Yeah.
Right. She yeah. maybe knew it better than you knew for a while.
Maybe.
You ultimately, of course, didn't settle on the West Coast, but the East Coast. You went to Boston University, I think.
Yeah. In 2014, I came to U.S., and I went to Indiana University first.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then I finished that, and then I go to Boston, and then I'm currently live in New Jersey. Mm-hmm.
Very good. Very good. For those of you just joining us, we are spending some time right now talking with the two singers headlining the cast of Rossini's The Barber of Seville, which is going to be opening this coming weekend, courtesy of the Kenosha Opera Festival under the direction of Nick Huff, who is also with us in our studios. So, Edith Grossman, as you were really studying and learning the craft of opera, what were some of the most important breakthroughs that occurred in terms of you refining your craft specifically as a singer? I mean, what are the, if we heard you from 10 years ago versus how you sing now, what have been the most important ways in which you've grown as a singer?
Well, 10 years ago, I was a soprano. So that's the biggest change, I think. When I first went into undergrad, I thought I was a soprano, so I was singing a lot of Susanna from Le Nozze di Figaro and, you know, the younger Terlina, kind of the soubrette almost roles. And then my teacher took me aside after the first year and said, hey, you know what? I think you might be a mezzo-soprano. Why don't we try out some of this mezzo-soprano repertoire? And she was spot on. The repertoire felt amazing. It felt much easier. And just growing from that, I, after college, moved to New York City and started working with Deb Birnbaum. And she's a wonderful vocal technician. So she worked a lot with me through breath. And that was my first, or my second, I guess, after the soprano revolution, that second click of, oh, this is how you breathe as a singer. And then a few years later, actually just in this past year and a half or so at Utah Opera studying with Nova Thomas, I had a couple of like, whoa, click moments where I was just like, oh, this is how the space works in my voice. And that's how you send it through the mask, which is kind of that area over the bridge of your nose and kind of in your cheeks and up through your forehead. So sensing like my voice growing and getting bigger and going into more repertoire like Strauss and Massenet and living in those realms of music has been a journey and an exciting one at that. So
I'm sure.
Yeah.
A lot of times when somebody is a high and relatively light soprano and then suddenly you're going into this deeper, darker place, part of the process is sort of letting in sound that was already there, that you maybe kind of pushed away in order to try to keep things light, when in fact maybe that wasn't your destiny. Is that kind of how it felt like for you? Like you were letting out all of this sound that before you had kind of bottled up? Or was it about accessing sound that wasn't there yet that you had to sort of learn how to create?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both, actually. I never really had a lot of access to my chest voice until the past, I'd say, even 3 years. So that was discovering a new sound and what to do with it and how to refine it.
Mm-hmm. And we should explain to our listeners that a chest voice for a singer, for a female singer, is when you are getting down into that deep, dark space and sound where most women speak. It's like a speaking voice kind of register versus something that resonates up in the head and is floatier. And so you were finding out how to properly utilize that part of your sound.
Yeah, how to utilize it, how to access it, and then how to mix it to get into the middle voice and then the head voice. And I think once I found that kind of meatier chest voice in my voice, I was able to then access a more meatier head voice, or things opened up and became rounder. And that was something that had always been there but not fully accessed yet. And that was... they all go together, so keep working, singers out there, you know?
Exciting. Well, very, very good. By the way, I knew your teacher, Nova Thomas, in Utah, when I was at the Lyric Opera of Chicago in the mid-'80s. She was covering the great Joan Sutherland the opera Anna Bolena. So Nova Thomas was sitting there for every single performance, right off stage, holding the score, and never had to go on, but she was diligently doing the work of a cover, and we'll talk about that because I know both of you have done that, and that's an interesting experience. But Hee Sung Che, so for you, compared to where you started singing to where you are now, what has been the most important ways in which you have grown as a singer, or what you've learned? What have been the most important breakthroughs for you?
It's always like challenging to like have a good technique, not only good technique, but as an artist, like good music and good character, how to deliver this to audience. Like that's always challenging. Like I had lots of like vocal issues and vocal technique issues maybe like when I was young, because like I started with tenor with wrong way.
Oh.
Because I was mimicking a lot like when I was young. Maybe. Yeah. So I was just mimicking like opera singers like when I was young. So
you'd hear like Placido Domingo and you sound like him and sing the notes he sang and
but like not good way. So like I had lots of time to like change that technique, and like when I change to good technique, my voice like get lower and lower, and currently I'm baritone. Yeah,
that's what it sounds like to me. And I know a lot of times young baritones and basses, one of the mistakes that's often made is they want to sound like they're older and bigger than they are.
That was also a problem too. Like when I changed the baritone, I feel like, oh, I'm a baritone. I need to like make a like bigger and darker sound. it got woofy and woofy.
Mm-hmm.
And so like currently I'm like still looking for my like bright sound and my natural sound. Mm. What is my voice? I'm still seeking. Mm. So I think it's going to be like my lifetime journey.
Mm.
Yeah.
Very, very good. Nick, I know that when you are bringing in singers to cast in, for instance, Daughter Regiment last summer, Barbara Seville this summer, you're not just looking for wonderful singers who can sing the role. I mean, this is a situation where there are other things to consider, such as?
Such as acting. You know, this is a comedy. I think a lot of people who have not seen an opera before may not realize how funny this piece is. And so you can't just have people up there that sound great, but they're like a wet fish. You have to, they have to be funny, you know? So they have to be, they have to be able to get up there and make people smile and get the jokes and sort of wink with the audience. And for something like this, for a piece like Barber, that's really huge. Your Figaro has to be fun, you know? It's everybody knows some of the stuff from Figaro because of Warner Brothers and the Bugs Bunny cartoons. You know, Bugs Bunny did a lot of Figaro-adjacent stuff in their cartoons. And there is a reason for that, because he's a really silly, fun character, and he's not taking it too seriously. I don't want to step on your characterization. You can talk more about Figaro. But I wanted somebody that could not take the moment too seriously, right, and laugh and smile. And the same thing with, take Rosina, Ida sitting here. She has to be fun and light and there with the two boys, Almaviva and Figaro. But she also has to be, she's a really self-possessed character. She kind of does what she wants to do. And so I needed to find a singer that could do that, that could flip on the dime there and be fun, but also say, wait a minute now, this is what I want. And so you're looking for people that, for me, people that can act and do it while they're singing. This is really difficult music. Singing, particularly, I mean, I'm thinking of Una Voce Poco Fa. Super tough. And you sing it so well, but it's also, you can juggle those two elements, you know, and the whole cast can.
Well, especially if you can really sing it well. I mean, if it's a struggle for you to sing it, then chances are you're not going to manage to do any acting whatsoever. But when you have it technically and musically well in hand, then you're free to do things with it. So it sounds like you've chosen well. It's also, Nick, a situation where obviously this is in a sense, a small production. I mean, it's a full production, but it's not in a full-fledged opera house. And there's, I should think, a lot of flexibility that you need people with kind of cooperative spirits to kind of make this work, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, the thing is, it's the second year of the festival, and so we're still growing. We began the festival with a five-year growth plan in mind. It's year two of that growth plan, and that five-year plan was made pre-COVID. So it's one of those things where we are trying mightily to stay on track and make sure we learn the lessons every year, but you do need people that sort of understand. You know, if we hired somebody that's only ever sung at the Met, they would probably go, oh, this is not the stage of the Met, is it? You know, but with what we have, I think we do very well. And I think the public's going to see that, that there's a lovely set and everyone's up there costumed in full characterization. There's an orchestra, which cannot be understated, the amount of time and effort and organizing and money that it takes to put together an orchestra. So we try to make sure we have all the parts there so that even though, you know, our kind of slug line after it says, Kenosha Opera Festival, your neighborhood opera company. So we definitely have like a local vibe to us, but the quality of the product, we want that to be world class. It always has to be top notch.
Very good. We're talking about the Kenosha Opera Festival's performances of The Barber of Seville by Rossini, performances this coming weekend, July 29th and 31st, and the following weekend, August 4th and August 6th. So let's talk a little bit about these two characters, these two roles, and what makes them really fun to sing. So, Hee-Sung Che, let's talk about the character of Figaro. Describe to our listeners who he is and how much fun it is to perform him.
Figaro is obviously barber because he's barber of Seville, but not only barber, like he's doing everything in the city. Like people always need him. If someone pays Figaro, I feel like Figaro do everything because even in opera, like, with the money, like my idea is like blooming. So like, yeah, Figaro is like really pleasant guy, and he's always happy, and he has lots of strategy to, like, make things happen. Yeah, mm. I feel like he can do everything.
Yeah, he's a mover and a shaker, and yes, mm-hmm. and there's a reason he's the title character, because mm-hmm. so much revolves around him. Mm-hmm. You get to sing the famous Largo al Factotum, which is the aria Figaro sings to introduce himself to the audience, and it's one of the most famous baritone arias of them all, and also ferociously difficult. Yes. How does it feel for you to be singing that, and does it feel good, like it fits you like a glove?
I mean, I've done this role like when I was in Indiana University, like which was like six or seven years ago. Like, it was really hard at that moment because I couldn't hit the high note at that moment. So like my
the high G at the end.
The high G, mm-hmm. and because even in that audition, I couldn't hit the G well, so like my teacher helped me a lot. I barely got casted, and then I sang Figaro, and it was really challenging at that moment. But like now, I feel like I'm pretty solid, and I'm just enjoy the character, and yeah, I can make people laugh a lot.
Mm. Yeah.
That comes in handy. But of course, it's really interesting. I think a lot of times when people hear things that are funny, mm. it's easy to get caught up in the funny mm-hmm. and not fully appreciate just how difficult, how challenging mm-hmm. the music is to sing. So, I mean, yeah. and that's the thing. You have to have it so well learned that mm-hmm. there's room for you to be funny then.
For sure, yeah. If I'm just funny, it's not going to be funny. Like, yeah, I should be really good at like singing and everything, and then I can show them I'm funny.
Yeah, well put.
That's my opinion.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly mm. right. Very, very mm. good. So Edith Grossman, Nick's already talked a little bit about the character of Rosina. Tell us more about what you think about her and how you want to portray her.
Yeah, so Rosina is she's a woman of means, independent means. She has her own money, which Dr. Bartolo is after, and so he has plans to marry her, and she does not want that. And she makes that very, very clear, even in her very first aria, even though she doesn't know that that's the initial plan. She's, I would call her a practical romantic, where she wants to find this fairy tale love, but she also knows that that's not necessarily how the world works. So when she comes across Lindoro, who is Count Almaviva, she gets this glimpse of what this fairy tale love could be like, and she runs with it, and also sees it as her opportunity to escape the clutches of Dr. Bartolo. So through a series of friendships with, you know, Figaro, of course. They make these plans and schemes to help her have meetings with Lindoro and eventually get her to escape her situation. And it's good.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So this is your first Rosina?
This is my first Rosina. I've covered it once, but this is my first time singing the role.
Right. Well, how exciting. So I thought it would be fun to talk for a moment about that phenomenon of covering, and
yeah.
that's of course when you are kind of what I mentioned earlier with your previous teacher Nova Thomas covering Joan Sutherland at the Lyric Opera of Chicago, being an essentially on standby, ready to perform if something befalls the singer who is actually cast. And so explain to our listeners just the challenge that's involved in being the cover, especially for a role like Rosina.
Yeah, so a cover is essentially an understudy. So you have to know the entire role, all of the staging, all of the characterizations, without having a rehearsal. Sometimes companies will have what they call a cover run, which is when they have all of the covers for the different roles run the show in like a room run, so in a studio. But generally speaking, if you get called in to do a performance, it could be at intermission, somebody gets sick, or it could be at the top of the show. You could be called a week before. You could be called 10 minutes before. Mm. And you just jump into the role. And I've been very fortunate I haven't had to jump into a role. But there's always that kind of that like excitement of you might have to. But the wonderful thing is that generally if somebody has to jump into a role, there aren't many other people out of the production, so you have all of these people working on stage with you to kind of push you around to where you would need to go. Yeah, and there's coaching. You can meet with the director beforehand if you have to jump in. But it is a difficult thing to do, but really exhilarating and a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, yeah. Fun and nerve-wracking all at the same time. Hee Song Jae, I think you have also been a cover in your career, I believe.
Yeah,
right?
I covered a lot in the Young Artists program. Yeah, I covered Marcello, Belcore, like the kind of almost all kind of like baritone repertoire. I mean, I performed lots of main role when I was in school, but after I got out of school, it's hard to get a title role or main role as a young artist.
Sure.
Yeah, like when you go to Young Artist program, you just cover the main role and like sing the small compromise roles. Yeah.
And wait for somebody to get sick.
Actually, I jumped in last season in Palm Beach Opera, but it was not a main role. Like in the Carmen, I was covering Morales and I was singing Don Cairo. But like on the last performance, like Morales has a problem. So like I just jumped in and did double duty.
Ah, wow. Oh, good for you. Very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
So, Nick, we are recording this interview that's airing Wednesday. We're recording it actually on Monday morning. Mm. So what remains in terms of preparing The Barber of Seville in the next few days?
Yeah, not too much. So it's Monday. That means it's Tech Week. so we are jumping in. We've had our orchestra Zitz Proba over the weekend, which if you don't know what that is, a Zitz is where it means like sit with the orchestra. So you sit in on an orchestra rehearsal. The singers sit in, and it's their first chance to sing with the orchestra. And the conductor is frantic the whole time because she's trying to get the singers and the orchestra coordinated. And this is the first and one of the only times for just music only, without staging, to coordinate everything. So that happened yesterday. We kicked off our tech week, and now we're going to start running the show every evening. Layering in more and more tech things. Lights are nearly finished. And costumes, and we get to the point where our dress rehearsal happens. That is Wednesday. Mm. So by the time our listeners are hearing this, we will be getting ready for the dress rehearsal. And then we'll have a little day off and go the next day on Friday.
There you go. Is this The Barber of Seville in its entirety, or is it slightly abridged?
I wouldn't call it abridged. There are cuts. It's a long title, and many operas that are longer get cut. So, for instance, Berta, the housekeeper of Bartolo and Rosina's house, has an aria that's written, but it's almost never done. So we're not doing it. I was excited to say, get Janice Pentico, who's playing Berta for us, to go out in public and do it in recital a couple times. So that was nice. We were calling it like a deleted scene or an Easter egg from the show. So there are cuts, but no, this is the show as you might normally see it, as major companies do it around the world.
And remind our listeners about who is entrusted with the duties of stage director and conductor.
Sure. So joining us, a couple of familiar names. We've got Ksenia Lilyotkina for one more time at the baton, and then Greg Eldridge, who's with us to stage direct. They were here with us last year for La Fille du Régiment.
Very good. Very good. So back to our two young singers. After Barber of Seville is done and you're on with your young careers, what are some of the things that you are hoping to do in the future as opera singers? Hee Song, let's start with you.
I don't have like big dream about like my career, but like I just want to keep singing. Like even though like small money or small area, whatever, wherever is fine for me. I just love to sing and performing. The most thing I love about opera is like co-working. Like if I just want to sing myself, I just can be happy with the concert and everything, but like I always like go for opera because I really want to work with my colleagues and like every staffs and orchestra, and it's like all like co-working. Like which is really fun, and that's really happy for me.
You like to be part of a team.
Yep.
Very good. How about you, Edith Grossman?
I'm going to have to say probably around the same thing. I just want to sing. I love the collaboration that happens in these big ensemble shows. Of course, you know, I have dream roles that I'd love to play. I'd love to do a Charlotte in a Werther. I'd love to do a Cherubino in Le Nozze di Figaro, especially Cherubino, because that's such an ensemble show. So there's a lot of collaboration in that. Yeah, I guess the goal is to be able to make a comfortable living singing opera.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Well, I know.
Well, we're glad that you're part of this upcoming production of The Barber of Seville. And Nick Cuff, for people who are interested in attending any of these four performances, what should they do?
Yeah, you can go to our website, KenoshaOperaFestival.com, and click on tickets. There's a page there with information about the show. It has the cast listing, and you can buy a ticket there. There are still tickets available for all four shows. We've added that second weekend this year. Last year we only did one weekend. So you've got four chances actually now to see it, which is really great. So hopefully you can make it to one of those four.
It's a wonderful opera, and what a wonderful opportunity to experience it in person, courtesy of the Kenosha Opera Festival. Nick Huff, its artistic director, and headlining the cast, Hee-sung Che and Edith Grossman. It was great to meet both of you, and I'm excited to hear you and see you in this delightful comedy, and we appreciate you making time for the morning show today. Thank you so much, and best wishes to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Greg.
And Nick, best wishes to you as well. And here are the closing measures of the overture to The Barber of Seville to finish out today's morning show here on WGTD. Tomorrow on the morning show, we're expected to have on our program several volunteers with AmeriCorps talking about the good work which they've been doing here in southeastern Wisconsin over the last several weeks. On Friday, we'll have a couple of different interviews, including one with a young woman by the name of Bellin Woodard. She had an interesting experience in elementary school when a schoolmate asked her to please pass her the skin-colored crayon. And young Belen, who happens to be African-American, realized that the crayon in question, the famous peach crayon, was not the color of Belen's skin at all. And it sort of set her on something of a crusade to help more of her fellow elementary students understand the diversity of the world and the beauty of all kinds of different skin colors. Ultimately, Belen Woodard wrote a lovely children's book that's just been published by Scholastic called More Than Peach. She calls herself a crayon activist, and we're going to be talking with her on tomorrow's morning show. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The program is archived on our website,